All right, so let's discuss a little bit the portion of Devarim, and we started the book of Devarim, and we'll also discuss a little bit of the previous parsha. You know, Devarim was Moshe Rabbeinu recounting for the Jewish people his whole experience with them since the time they left Egypt, and was going through the history. It was in a very short time. He started, the verse says it was on the first day of Shabbat, and we know that Moshe Rabbeinu passed on the seventh day of Adar. So you know you have Shabbat and the 7 days of Adar, so very short time. Moshe Rabbeinu recounted everything that took place in the past. And one of the things we find in the very end of the Parsha was he recounted the story that took place with the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuven. And this goes back to the portion of Matos that we learned in the Parsha before the end in the book of Bamidbar. So what happened over there was that the Jewish people were trying to go over the Jordan River to go into the land of Israel. So the land of Israel was on the west side of the Jordan River, and the Jewish people found themselves on the east side of the Jordan River, and they needed to cross over. But along the Jordan River and along their whole path over there, there were various different nations, and they could not cross over them without, you know, getting permission or asking them to go through or waging war. And the Torah goes into a lot of details how they approached various different nations trying to get over to the other side of the Jordan River. But eventually the Torah tells us that there were the two great kings, Sichon and Og, and they waged war with the Jewish people. The other ones refused to let them go. They, you know, negotiated with them. They asked them, but Sichon and Og just waged war against them. And of course, miraculously, they were victorious. Then there was also a waging of war against the Midianite. That was the other war, but that wasn't so much to capture their land over there. But the main land was Sichon and Og. And then two of the tribes, and also a little bit of another tribe, but mainly two, the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, those the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuven, they came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, you know what, the place that we conquered over here on this side of the Jordan River, the land of Og and Sichon and Og, is a very fertile land. We have lots of cattle, and we would rather take our inheritance that belongs to our tribes we were supposed to get on the other side. We'll take it right here, and then we won't have to go any further. This would be a beautiful place for us to graze, for the animals to graze, to raise our families over here. That would be a perfect place for us. But they asked Moshe to stay there. Moshe Rabbeinu was incensed by this request. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, what do you mean? That your brothers will go and fight and you're going to sit over here? And you're going to sit here, you know, relax, let them go fight? And he gives them a whole big speech, a whole big rebuke speech. He says to them, you know, you are going in the footsteps of your parents. You know, what you're doing over here is you're going to cause for the rest of the Jewish people not to want to go to Israel. They are going to interpret that the reason you want this land is not because you're giving reasons. They're going to interpret it is because you're afraid to go into war. You're looking for yourself for safety. You're trying to make yourself comfortable. You're using that as an excuse. the other Jewish people are going to see, they're going to say, we don't want to go to the land of Israel also. Now what's going to happen? He reminds them what happened. So God punished them earlier, and they had to spend 40 years in the desert, and now you're starting all over again, and you're going to have the Jewish people refuse to go to Israel, and God was going to continue to keep us in the desert. How could we do such a thing? So the sons of God and Reuven says to Moshe, no. They says, look, we will first build stables, places for our cattle, we'll build homes for our wives, for our children, they'll stay on this side. And then they said, "V'anachnu neicholei tzchushim." We will go very quickly on the other side over there, and we will go in front of all the armies. We'll be the first ones to go. What does this mean? Generally speaking, I'm bringing this from the Pasuk as a metaphor when we read about the wars or the fights. It reminds us of our own little wars that take place within ourselves. And there's some lesson, some message that we can take from the way the wars that took place at the time that Moshe Rabbeinu recorded in the Chumash, and we can try to apply it and see if we can find ways to help us with our own issues that we face, our own inner enemies, and our own inner inability sometimes to be active, and we're trying to overcome the various different parts of our lives that don't allow us to move forward. So we're going through this so we can see later on how we can apply this. So now they said they're going to go ahead. They're going to go ahead. When they got him, Reuven said they're going to go ahead. Now, what they wanted to show, basically, they wanted to prove to the other Jewish people, what they wanted to prove to them is, no, that what we did before, that we said before, we're going to say over here. And also the fact that, you know, our fathers did so, you know, back in Egypt, they stayed behind. They wanted to make sure that the Jewish people and Moshe Rabbeinu and they themselves, to make sure that what they're really doing isn't because the request wasn't because they were afraid. So that's why they were going to prove it to Moshe Rabbeinu. Says, we're actually going to go first. We're going to be the ones that are going to fight first. In other words, we're going to be ahead of the line. We're going to be amongst the Jewish people. We're going to be the fighters. And Rashi explains that they were mighty warriors. They were very strong. We're very strong people. And Moshe Rabbeinu accepted their proposal. And he says, he makes for them a very explicit condition. He says, if you are going to keep your promise and you are going to go first and you're going to wage the war, then you can have this part of the land.
But it's odd because they waited for 40 years to come into Eretz Yisrael. And then it's nice of them to help fight, but there's something about living in the land. You're like almost there. You're right by the Gremitz, you're right by the border, and then you say, I'm going to settle outside.
There's various different ways to explain this, but Taka, the Midrash says that because they were a hasty people, to get it hasty, they were actually the first ones to be exiled. So they didn't actually last. It was and there was a whole lot of precautions for that, and it's not considered a positive thing that they wanted to be there on the very simple level. But yet, there was a very strong negative over here because they were going to cause other people to get them scared. Now, I want to bring this as just as a side point to an allusion, you know. We know that the in Israel, all the boys, when they're 18 or so, they're drafted into the army. And they have to go fight, whether they like it or not. They're drafted. They have to become part of the army.
Is it just the boys or the boys and the
girls? Girls have sort of options, I guess. They can do, okay, so what do they have? So the actually girls as well, but the girls, I guess, there's what they call Sherut Lumi. I believe what it is, the laws, that means they civil service for the, they don't actually have to go into the army, they can substitute the army service. Again, I'm not so familiar with the law, so I may not be accurately telling you what it is. But the point here is that there is the Haredim, the religious, it's also the women, the religious women, maybe not religious women have to go to the army, but the religious boys who are part of a yeshiva, part of a school, they're exempt or deferred. It's not exempt, it's a deferment. So they allow them, you know, this has been since the founding of the State of Israel, that they allow them to study in the yeshiva, and then eventually, you know, they need to serve or they get pushed off further, whatever. This has been going on for a long time, but some of the non-religious groups have been very strongly making a lot of noise, and they would say that there should be a load that should be shivyon nebenetel, that means the load should be carried equally. Truth of the matter is, just like every army has various components to it, and it's obvious you can't only have a foot soldier who is actually shooting. You need people in the kitchen to provide the food for them, you need all the backup, you need all the support, you need the logistics, you know, you have a lot of, an army has various different components. Not everybody's on the front line, you know, there have to be those people that are planning, those who are far, those who are observing, there's various different kinds, but the army distributes the work amongst all the soldiers, you know, whoever has to go where they find that you have to do. Some are more likely to get hurt, they're on the front, some are less likely to get hurt, but everything is needed. It's obvious, it was obvious to the people that originally agreed to this, that the nature of the Jewish people is a very important component, and the fact that the people learn Torah and get Hashem's help, that's a part, that's a very important component to the safety of Eretz Yisrael, of Israel. So it's not only the soldier that is fighting there, but it is all these pieces together that constitute this safety and the state of Israel, the Jewish character of a state. And so it's been going on for many years until lately they've started to make a lot of noise, and there's been changes, you know, they use the powers of the Knesset, the religious people, to, you know, this has been back and forth. But one thing is to remember what the verse says over here. It's important not to give the sense to the other people, your brothers will go to war and you'll sit over here, which means even if it's a necessary component, or even if their intentions are good and they're actually contributing something as equal and maybe more important than the actual fighting itself, but it's very important not to have the people misunderstood it, they misconstrued, they don't understand, they think that the reason they're not doing it because they're afraid to go to war, or they're getting out of it, they call it Hishtabtut. But you see in the pasuk over here, it was important for Moshe Rabbeinu, and what they said was, actually, we will go out to the war first. Now there was another comment, you know, by the Rebbe, that Rebbe explains also over here as far as this goes. It wasn't what I was going to elaborate today on, but Rebbe makes the comment that in a way, the Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven, they wanted to be shepherds, basically, because shepherds are not as much involved in the daily distractions. A shepherd sits with his sheep, you know, he lets the animals graze, and he can still sort of remain on a high level without having to get his hand dirty in the mud. You know, he can still be a little bit involved more with study and other things, because it doesn't take that much to see. You gotta be there basically and just watch the animals. It's not such a task which takes your mind off of learning and not off connection to Hashem. So the Rebbe said that Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, they wanted that kind of life. That was another thing. They wanted a life on that side of the Jordan, in a way to have a more closer connection to God. But unlike the Meraglim, which already also wanted to stay in the desert for a similar idea, but they wanted to disconnect to what? Nobody go to Israel. Here they said, the rest of the people go to Israel, but we'll stay here and we'll become their, we'll be part of them, because they said we'll join them in the forces. So that wasn't so bad. But that's another idea which the Rebbe elaborates on. But we here want to discuss about, so what did they prove when they said we're going to go fight first? So they wanted to totally uproot that idea that people can think that maybe they're not going for other reasons, but they're saying very clearly, we're going to be on the line of fire. We're going to be the first ones over there. So it actually turns out at the end of the day that their part in the war is more a kind of a Mesiris Nefesh kind. It's a more self-sacrifice, because they're putting themselves actually right in the line of fire. So while the other Jews are also joining the war, but maybe it's not as dangerous, or it's not as probable for them getting hurt as it is for these for the ones that are heading out in the front. And the Rebbe says something very interesting. And the Rebbe has a whole build-up in Rashi, which I'm not going to go through. But the Rebbe says that originally, Moshe Rabbeinu was satisfied with these Gad and Reuven joining the army, but sort of going in the front line of the army. But later on, he changed it, and he actually wanted to have their own group itself. He wanted them to have a battalion. He wanted them to have just of there. So they should not even be part, but the face of the group, not ahead of the group, but they should actually go ahead. They should have their own. There would be a whole force, a whole battalion that would be just of the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. And as the Rebbe explains it, that originally Moshe Rabbeinu thought he still has a chance to go into the land of Israel, because God made a promise. God said, you will not enter the land of Israel, God said. So, but Moshe Rabbeinu thought, if he's going to give to the sons of Gad and Reuven this part of the land, so that means already that this becomes sort of part of Israel. Now, even though he made a condition with them that they have to go, they're not, but when they're going to fulfill the condition, it's retroactively going to be. He's giving it to them now. He's saying, okay, you can have the land now, provided that you fulfill these conditions. But when they fulfill the conditions, retroactively, the land is going to be theirs from this point. So that means that Moshe was already a little bit allowed, a little bit, to be in part of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, the section that was outside of this side of the Jordan, but it's still Eretz Yisrael. So he thought, maybe because Hashem allowed me already to be a little bit in Eretz Yisrael, maybe he's going to, if I pray enough to him, maybe he's going to let me go into Eretz Yisrael itself also. There was a chance for that. And because of that chance, Moshe Rabbeinu was satisfied with sending the sons of Gad and Reuven within the army itself, because all the wars that we read in the Chumash that Moshe Rabbeinu waged, whether it was with the Amalekim, or it was with the Midianite, whether it was the other wars, they were all supernatural wars. Because, like, no one was killed, you know, in Midian, not a single person. Normally, when you wage a war, even the side that is victorious, still, sometimes people fall. You remember the story with the rescue in Entebbe? Well, one person died over there, even though they were able to rescue all of them. So sometimes, when you have a war and you win, but it still takes some life away, some people. But over here, with Moshe Rabbeinu, and in one case it was Vayish ben Shevi, it was only one captive. So basically, the wars that took place with when Moshe Rabbeinu was around, they didn't require so much natural ways, because things were done a lot in a supernatural way. So when Moshe Rabbeinu knew or he was hoping that he'd go in, he was satisfied with them going in the head of the line, that would be enough. But from that point on, later on, Moshe Rabbeinu was begging Hashem, and Hashem said to him, "No, no way, you're not going to Israel." And he says, "That's it." And Moshe Rabbeinu saw that before his death, he's going to have to rebuke them. He was telling the people, he was telling them the Musar, what he was telling them. So now Moshe Rabbeinu knows that he's not going to be the one that's going to. It's like the Pasuk said before, Yeshua is going to be the one who's going to inherit them. Now Yeshua, even though while Moshe Rabbeinu was there, everything worked on a supernatural way, but Moshe Rabbeinu knew that once he's gone, Yeshua is going to have to wage war in a natural way. It's not going to be another. So now, he wasn't ready for them just to be at the head. He wanted some more security. So in this case, he wanted them to be in their own group, and just to go ahead and sort of assure, because they were such mighty warriors, and they had a special somehow, as the verse says, they the Torah of Zeruiah of Kotkei, I mean, in war, it was serious stuff. They would, with a sword, they would knock the hand and the head off, and this was a special power that the God had. So he sent them in front over there because they were supposed to. The Torah tells them not to allow anybody, l'schai kol neshama, not allow anybody to live that was in the land of Israel at that time. Now, I mean, to see, because the halacha is, I believe, that if they went and they run away from themselves, that's okay. It's only if they wage war. But the Rebbe seems to say that in order to accomplish that, the Bnei God, the Bnei Reuven, these warriors had that special power, even more than the sons of Yehuda. So, like, they were, like, special warriors. But at the end of the day, what was the specialty of Bnei God, Bnei Reuven? They were ready to sacrifice themselves as a group. They said, "We're going to go in the front. We're going to go in the front, and we're going to take the hit, and we're going to wage the war." Which means they have Mesiras Nefesh, which basically means they're ready to self-sacrifice. Bless you. What does it mean in our lives? So, there's various ways of tackling your own insecurities, your own inhibitions. There's various ways to tackle them, to try to overcome them. And the most simplest level, it's an intellectual process in which you try to explain to yourself, and try to work things out, and you, I guess, you use the parts of your soul. There's five parts to the soul. In the Kabbalah, we talk about five parts to the soul. It's the five names are Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, and Yechida. Those are the names of the souls. Whereas the Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama represent the emotional and the intellectual and the capacities of the person on the revealed level, the Chaya, Yechida, they represent the soul on a very deeper, on a more hidden level, which is not revealed, doesn't come out, is not open. It's not. So, normally, when we approach life on an intellectual, on an emotional basis, the way to work things through, then we're employing our nefesh, ruach, and neshama, the three levels, which are revealed levels. That's what we're using. Those are the powers that we use, our intellect, our emotions, to overcome all the other challenges that we have, the different challenges. But then, we also have the power for Mesirut Nefesh. Mesirut Nefesh means to sacrifice yourself, to give up. That's not an intellectual outcome, which means intellectually one does not sacrifice himself for God or for what he needs to do, but that represents a deeper level within your soul that you are ready to go beyond. Somebody goes and fights in the army, and maybe they can get away without fighting the army, and they go, it's their dedication, their devotion, that they have to the Jewish people. You have a lot of kids coming from the United States. They're not drafted to the army, and yet they'll join the army because they are. So it's not an intellectual decision, because intellectually, you're probably better safe sitting in a nice, quiet community in Sharon. Don't put your life at risk by going to fight. So, but there's something deeper in us. It's not just our intellect. It's something who we are on a deeper level, our chaya, our yechida, our inside, that we want to be part of the Jewish people. We want to stand up for the Jewish people. We want to do things not only because rationally it makes sense, but it's just who we are. We want to do so. We want to dedicate the service. God and Reuven represent that level of self-sacrifice, the deeper and more inside level to overcome. And but the idea is that you have to, we're not looking for sacrifices here, if people give up their life, but we want that that power that you have, deep power, that it should penetrate, that also your action should be working through that. So sometimes intellectually you cannot overcome. Let's say sometimes, you know, you have good reasons for being sad. You have good reason for being depressed. You have good reasons, you know. I mean, you don't have money to pay the bills. They're throwing you out of your house. Your kids have done something wrong. You know, the people are after you. You had bad news. So somehow, intellectually, you know, you find yourself having a good reason. You know, things are bad, you know, and they're... therefore, you became immobilized. You can't do anything. You become that's when you have to sort of use your deeper powers. You have to dig in deeper in yourself. That's the level of the Mesirut Nefesh. That's the level of the Mesirut Nefesh that you have inside. That Mesirut Nefesh is used to help you overcome, so that your intellect and everything else that you're working with, it helps you sort of overcome those things, so that even intellectually later on, you can, when there's a higher light, there's something more deeper shining in you, that you can sort of get more energy and more, I guess, power to go ahead and do so, because it comes from a deeper level of the soul. And yet, that means that you're working with your inside, with your deepest level, to work with your outside. But sometimes you just use that power that you have. It's like Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, it's a time in which every person has the opportunity to reveal their deepest level within themselves, that they actually almost like are giving up their life for Hashem, you know. So they're actually bringing up to the open. Is that? Sometimes you use those powers to help you with your inner struggles, but sometimes you're almost like dedicating yourself to Hashem. Unfortunately, yeah.
How does that tie in with bitachon?
With what?
Bitachon. Like, to
faith. Trust.
Trust and faith.
To faith that what? That things will be
faith,
good?
Faith in God. That whatever that you just believe, you have this love and faith that you want to give up your life because you just trust it's for the... That's what you need to do for God. That's
most of the most of the time
allow you to have the faith and trust.
Yeah.
Most of the time the term bitachon is used in the context of trusting Hashem that things will turn out well. It's not bitachon to go and sacrifice yourself, but actually you're trusting Hashem what seems to be a problem is actually not going to be a problem. But you trust Hashem that it's not going to be a problem. So say that you thought because maybe you had a big loss, but you trust Hashem, you know what? This loss is actually going to end up being to my benefit, and then something much better comes out. So mostly the concept of bitachon is that you don't despair of what befalls you because you trust Hashem that He will turn it out for the good for you. It won't really be as perceived as bad, but it'll actually be good for you. That's most of the time bitachon. Here we're talking about what are you ready to do for Hashem? What are you ready? What?
Sacrifice yourself.
Yeah, what would you ready to do for Hashem? So, a lot of times, you know, people say, oh, I do a lot for Hashem. What do I do for Hashem? Oh, you know, I try to be a good person. I try to come to Shir once a week. I try to go to Shul when I can. I do, you know, that. Okay, that's a sacrifice, yes. And, you know, a sacrifice is not really measured independently. It's measured every person. What they sacrifice, in other words, what's hard for them to do. So, what they do for Hashem, that's a sacrifice, any sacrifice. That's why it's called a korban. A korban is a sacrifice. It's something which you do for Hashem. You sacrifice yourself. Now,
this is a level
the ultimate sacrifice is, yeah, sacrifice is, which means like Abraham took his son Isaac, that was a, he was sacrificing his love and his future for Hashem, because that was Hashem told him. So that's not bitachon, that's sort of accepting. Now,
right.
We are very fortunate that we are not challenged on a real sacrifice. Our sacrifices is overcoming our convenience, our habits, our ideas. You know, we have to sacrifice a little. We don't have literal sacrifice. Nobody is gonna kill us if we go to shul, if we do Shabbos or whatever. Nobody's gonna do anything bad to us if we keep kosher. You know, the things, you know, we're on the contrary. Sometimes, you know, you get respect for that. You know, so it doesn't mean you don't have to sacrifice. Although people think there is a sacrifice. I gotta keep two sets of dishes. I gotta, you know, it's a headache, they think, or you know, but people who haven't tried keeping Shabbos think that keeping Shabbos, not using the telephone or not not watching TV or not using the computer, is a sacrifice. But the truth of the matter is, they don't know. They're sacrificing because they're using it. If you take one day a week in which you cut yourself off, you have the real menucha. You have the real relaxation. You have the real rest. It's beautiful. It's not a sacrifice. It's really very nice. But these are sacrifices that are small sacrifices, we call them. But sometimes people's life was threatened. So that they were threatened that, you know, if they don't bow down or they don't change, they don't convert to another religion, their life was threatened. And many Jews lost their lives. They lost their lives because they refused to succumb to the, and they were tortured and they were killed, and sometimes, you know, we wonder if we would be able to do that, how we would fare. But we should never know of those situations. But the point here is, on a daily basis, we are not literally challenged to sacrifice ourselves. However, we always have to remember that idea that Tanya says, that the truth of the matter is, if we were called for sacrifice, we don't feel it now because we're not called for it. But if the calling came for us to sacrifice, we would. And that's why a person should think that the Rebbe writes in the Tanya that if you have, you're tempted very strongly to do something that you know you shouldn't do, think to yourself, the Alter Rebbe says, that even if you were challenged to, God forbid, deny God's existence, you would be ready to give up your life. So, how come I'm not ready to give up my desire, so I want to eat this piece of meat which is not kosher. Give it up, it's not such a big deal. So what you're doing is you're using your power of Mesiris Nefesh, which we call the Bnei God, the Bnei Ruven. The God and Ruven, those are fighting, those are Mesiris Nefesh. We're using that for us to help us do our service to Hashem. We're saying that we're calculating, yes, we have that power for Mesirut Nefesh, for self-sacrifice. But do we actually have to self-sacrifice? No. But then it comes once a year on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, we have the ability to self-sacrifice. Now, yes, no, we don't die. But at the Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur, it says that when you say those last verses, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, you have to imagine as if somebody is threatening your life for the unity of Hashem, and you're ready to give up your life to the unity of Hashem, and you're saying, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That is sort of the closest you get to the actual Mesiris Nefesh. And the two parts of the Bnei God of Bnei Ruven, whether it was the way initially Moshe Rabbeinu wanted them to be part of the army, which means in that case that they should impact, that Mesiris Nefesh should help you do what you're supposed to do, or even to the level of the highest level of Mesiris Nefesh, which comes by Yom Kippur, those are the two parts that we possess in ourselves, and we could sort of bring about the highest, deepest level in ourselves, and especially when we talk about the 3 weeks, and Tisha B'Av is this coming Shabbos, just in a few days from now, to turn things around, you know, from the extreme bad sort of to the extreme good, you know, in other words, to all these negative bad stuff that we did, and they're exiled, they were punished, they're all at a certain level, they're at a lower level, but when we reach in, tap into the level of Chai Yechida, the depth of our souls, we sort of reach into a higher level, into the infinite of Hashem's infinite light, and that sort of rectifies, and that sort of fixes all the negativities and all the problems, whether it's the averis we did to deserve the galus or the actual exile, and then comes the salvation. But that's something that we have to sort of dig in deep to ourselves and find that level in which we are saying, no matter what, sometimes just to go slowly and to work out and say, oh, I'm going to figure out, I'm going to work it through, till I'll figure it out, you may not succeed. But if you sort of jump into it and you say, no, you know what? I don't understand. I don't know why. I had an individual who I was talking to him many times to come to shul to, you know, it didn't make sense to me. He has questions. He doesn't understand. You know, he has a lot of sort of intellectual, and he has problems, you know, with this whole religion business, the organized religion. And then eventually he started coming to shul on a regular basis. So I asked him, I said, what happened? I said, what happened? I mean, he said, I'll be honest with you. He says, my questions were not answered. But I just felt from this that this was the right thing and the right place for me. It was something, he employed something deeper. It wasn't the intellect and emotion. It touched him something deeper in his soul, which is beyond his questions. And you know what? Eventually the questions go away too, because you have that power of Mischaya Yechida, that deeper levels of the soul that they impact the lower level of the soul. And then all of a sudden it starts making sense too. So sometimes you can hit a stone wall and you don't know, you can't go through it because you're stuck. You have to reach into your deeper sense, your deeper level, the Chaya, the Yechida, and sort of bring that out to the open so that it, first of all, that it begins to impact your Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama, that your actions change around, and it sort of starts making sense to you intellectually as well. And sometimes just by doing without any mesirut nefesh, going out there, and that's the way to conquer the war, Yetzer Hara. And same thing is true, I think, in all aspects of life, not only with Yiddishkeit, but you know, you just gotta pull yourself out. If you start to figuring things out and you start, you know, trying to calculate, you realize, you know, you're not gonna end. You just gotta say, enough being depressed, enough being sad, enough being done. I'm out of here. I'm here. No more me. I'm going out there, and you start, and that's sort of that push that you get from the inside. And then you see, you change your life around, and you make yourself a better life. So that's the Mesiras Nefesh of the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuben.